2. The Titan City. August 3rd. I went back this morning, armed with a revolver. Somehow, without thinking that it might make a difference, I did not step in the very middle of the space between the boulders. Undoubtedly, as a result of this, my descent was more prolonged and impetuous than before, and seemed to consist mainly of a series of spiral somersaults. It must have taken me several minutes to recover from the ensuing vertigo, and when I came to, I was lying on the violet grass. This time I went boldly down the slope, and keeping as much as I could in the shelter of the bizarre purple and yellow vegetation, I stole towards the looming city. All was very still. There was no breath of wind in those exotic trees, which appeared to imitate, in their lofty upright boles and horizontal foliage, the severe architectural lines of the Cyclopean buildings. I had not gone far when I came to a road in the forest, a road paved with stupendous blocks of stone, at least 20 feet square. It ran towards the city. I thought for a while that it was wholly deserted, perhaps disused, and I even dared to walk upon it, till I heard a noise behind me, and turning, saw the approach of several singular entities. Terrified, I sprang back and hid myself in a thicket, from which I watched the passing of those creatures, wondering fearfully if they had seen me. Apparently my fears were groundless, for they did not even glance at my hiding place. It is hard for me to describe or even visualize them now, for they were totally unlike anything that we are accustomed to think of as human or animal. They must have been 10 feet tall, and they were moving along with colossal strides that took them from sight in a few instants, beyond a turn of the road. Their bodies were bright and shining, as if encased in some sort of armor, and their heads were equipped with high, curving appendages of opalescent hues, which nodded above them like fantastic plumes, but may have been antennae or other sense organs of a novel type. Trembling with excitement and wonder, I continued my progress through the richly colored undergrowth. As I went on, I perceived for the first time that there were no shadows anywhere. The light came from all portions of the sunless amber heaven, pervading everything with a soft, uniform luminosity. All was motionless and silent, as before, and there was no evidence of bird, insect, or animal life in all this preternatural landscape. But when I had advanced to within a mile of the city, as well as I could judge the distance in a realm where the very proportions of objects were unfamiliar, I became aware of something which at first was recognizable as a vibration rather than a sound. There was a queer thrilling in my nerves, the disquieting sense of some unknown force or emanation flowing through my body. This was perceptible for some time before I heard the music, but having heard it, my auditory nerves identified it at once with the vibration. It was faint and far off, and seemed to emanate from the very heart of the Titan city. The melody was piercingly sweet, and resembled at times the singing of some voluptuous feminine voice. However, no human voice could have possessed that unearthly pitch, the shrill, perpetually sustained notes that somehow suggested the light of remote worlds and stars translated into sound. Ordinarily, I am not very sensitive to music. I have even been reproached for not reacting more strongly to it. But I had not gone much farther when I realized the particular mental and emotional spell which the far-off sound was beginning to exert upon me. There was a siren-like allurement which drew me on, forgetful of the strangeness and potential perils of my situation, and I felt a slow, drug-like intoxication of brain and senses. In some insidious manner, I know not how nor why, the music conveyed the ideas of vast but attainable space and altitude, of superhuman freedom and exultation, and it seemed to promise all the impossible splendors of which my imagination has vaguely dreamt. The forest continued almost to the city walls. Peering from behind the final boskage, I saw their overwhelming battlements in the sky above me, and noted the flawless jointure of their prodigious blocks. I was near the great road, which entered an open gate large enough to admit the passage of behemoths. There were no guards in sight, and several more of the tall, gleaming entities came striding along and went in as I watched. From where I stood, I was unable to see inside the gate, for the wall was stupendously thick. The music poured from that mysterious entrance in an ever-strengthening flood, and sought to draw me on with its weird seduction, eager for unimaginable things. It was hard to resist, hard to rally my willpower and turn back. I tried to concentrate on the thought of danger, but the thought was tenuously unreal. At last I tore myself away and retraced my footsteps, very slowly and lingeringly, till I was beyond reach of the music. Even then the spell persisted, like the effects of a drug, and all the way home I was tempted to return and follow those shining giants into the city. August 5th. I have visited the new dimension once more. I thought I could resist that summoning music, and I even took some cotton wadding with which to stuff my ears if it should affect me too strongly. I began to hear the supernal melody at the same distance as before, and was drawn onward in the same manner. But this time I entered the open gate. I wonder if I can describe that city. I felt like a crawling ant upon its mammoth pavements, amid the measureless babble of its buildings, of its streets and arcades. Everywhere there were columns, obelisks, and the perpendicular pylons of fane-like structures that would have dwarfed those of Thebes and Heliopolis. And the people of the city, how is one to describe them, or give them a name? I think that the gleaming entities I first saw are not the true inhabitants, but are only visitors, perhaps from some other world or dimension like myself. The real people are giants too, but they move slowly, with solemn hieric paces. Their bodies are nude and swart, and their limbs are those of Caryatides, massive enough, it would seem, to uphold the roofs and lintels of their own buildings. I fear to describe them minutely, for human words would give the idea of something monstrous and uncouth, and these beings are not monstrous, but they have merely developed in obeyance to the laws of another evolution than ours, the environmental forces and conditions of a different world. Somehow I was not afraid when I saw them. Perhaps the music had dragged me till I was beyond fear. There was a group of them just inside the gate, and they seemed to pay me no attention whatever as I passed them. The opaque, jet-like orbs of their huge eyes were impassive as the carven eyes of androsphinxes, and they uttered no sound from their heavy, straight, expressionless lips. Perhaps they lacked the sense of hearing, for their strange, semi-rectangular heads were devoid of anything in the nature of external ears. I followed the music, which is still remote, and seemed to increase little in loudness. I was soon overtaken by several of those beings whom I had previously seen on the road outside the walls, and they passed me quickly, and disappeared in the labyrinth of buildings. After them there came other beings of a less gigantic kind, and without the bright shards or armor worn by the first comers. Then, overhead, two creatures with long, translucent, blood-colored wings, intricately veined and ribbed, came flying side by side and vanished behind the others. Their faces, featured with organs of unsurmisable use, were not those of animals, and I felt sure that they were beings of a high order of development. I saw hundreds of those slow-moving, somber entities whom I have identified as the true inhabitants, but none of them appeared to notice me. Doubtless, they were accustomed to seeing far weirder and more unusual kinds of life than humanity. As I went on, I was overtaken by dozens of improbable-looking creatures, all going in the same direction as myself, as if drawn by the same siren melody. Deeper and deeper I went into the wilderness of colossal architecture, led by that remote, ethereal, opiate music. I soon noticed a sort of gradual ebb and flow in the sound, occupying an interval of 10 minutes or more. But, by imperceptible degrees, it grew sweeter and nearer. I wondered how it could penetrate that manifold maze of builded stone and be heard outside the walls. I must have walked for miles in the ceaseless gloom of those rectangular structures that hung above me, tier on tier, at an awful height in the amber zenith. Then, at length, I came to the core and secret of it all. Preceded and followed by a number of those chimerical entities, I emerged on a great square, in whose center was a temple-like building more immense than the others. The music poured, imperiously shrill and loud, from its many-columned entrance. I felt the thrill of one who approaches the sanctum of some hierarchical mystery when I entered the halls of that building. People who must have come from many different worlds or dimensions went with me, and before me, along the titanic colonnades whose pillars were graven with indecipherable runes and enigmatic bas-reliefs. The dark, colossal inhabitants of the town were standing, or roaming about, intent, like all the others, on their own affairs. None of these beings spoke, either to me or to one another, and though several eyed me casually, my presence was evidently taken for granted. There are no words to convey the incomprehensible wonder of it all. And the music? I have utterly failed to describe that also. It was as if some marvelous elixir had been turned into sound waves, an elixir conferring the gift of superhuman life, and the high, magnificent dreams which are dreamt by the immortals. It mounted in my brain like a supernal drunkenness as I approached the hidden source. I do not know what obscure warning prompted me, now, to stuff my ears with cotton before I went any further, though I could still hear it, still feel its peculiar, penetrant vibration. The sound became muted when I had done this, and its influence was less powerful henceforth. There is little doubt that I owe my life to this simple and homely precaution. The endless rows of columns grew dim for a while, as the interior of a long basaltic cavern, and then, some distance ahead, I perceived the glimmering of a soft light on the floor and pillars. The light soon became an overflooding radiance, as if gigantic lamps were being lit in the temple's heart, and the vibrations of the hidden music pulsed more strongly in my nerves. The hall ended in a chamber of immense, indefinite scope, whose walls and roof were doubtful with unremoving shadows. In the center, amid the pavement of mammoth blocks, there was a circular pit, above which seemed to float a fountain of flame that soared in one perpetual, slowly lengthening jet. This flame was the sole illumination, and also was the source of the wild, unearthly music. Even with my purposefully deadened ears, I was wooed by the shrill and starry sweetness of its singing, and I felt the voluptuous lure and the high, vertiginous exultation. I knew immediately that the place was a shrine, and that the transdimensional beings who accompanied me were visiting pilgrims. There were scores of them, perhaps hundreds, but all were dwarfed in the cosmic immensity of that chamber. they were gathered before the flame in various attitudes of worship. They bowed their exotic heads, or made mysterious gestures of adoration with unhuman hands and members, and the voices of several, deep as booming drums or sharp as the stridation of giant insects, were audible amid the singing of the fountain. Spellbound, I went forward and joined them. Enthralled by the music and by the vision of the soaring flame, I paid as little heed to my outlandish companions as they to me. The fountain rose and rose until its light flickered on the limbs and features of throned, colossal statues behind it. Of heroes, gods or demons from the earlier cycles of alien time, staring in stone from a dusk of inimitable mystery. The fire was green and dazzling, pure as the central flame of a star. It blinded me, and when I turned my eyes away, the air was filled with webs of intricate color, with swiftly changing arabesques whose numberless, unwonted hues and patterns were such as no mundane eye had ever beheld. And I felt a stimulating warmth that filled my very marrow with intenser life.